Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is the Bald-Faced Truth.
When I was a kid, just 9 years old, the 49ers were playing the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. Joe Montana to Dwight Clark. The catch, you remember the catch? Well, when the catch happened, well, let me play it.
The 49ers have won, and you know what? For one of the rare times, what they thought was going to be a barn burner is exactly that. And, of course, for the upstart 49ers, they're 6 yards away from Pontiac. Third and three.
We'll see a pickup sometime on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking, throwing in the end zone.
When that play happened, I ran out the back door of my parents' house. They had one of those old sliding glass doors, 1970s ranch-style house. Went right out the backyard, right into the backyard, right down the neighborhood, celebrating. I missed the end of the football game. That's how wrapped up I was in the 49ers scoring that touchdown against the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys almost came back. I missed that whole thing. I thought about you last night, and I thought about that, because you're a Blazer fan. You lived and died with the Trailblazers last night, and I lived and died with my sports teams growing up, and I really feel for you in that context. The Blazers built the 15-point lead, and what is it about the number 15? Up 15 on the Bulls in the 92 playoffs, up 15 on the Lakers in 2000 in the Western Conference Finals, up 15 last night against the Warriors, and the Warriors happen to be the best in the business when they're down 15 at coming back. They come back about 40% of the time when they're down by 15 points at halftime in the last 4 years. That is a remarkable statistic. The Blazers, in the same position, about 8% of the time they come back to win the basketball game. So I look at what happened last night, and I look at Steve Kerr in the post game. I was there in Oakland. I'm back in Portland today. But in the post game, I was thinking to myself, you know, is he going to say it? Is he going to come in and say, we stole this one? And Steve Kerr walked in.
We stole that game. I thought they outplayed us much of the night, the majority of the night. But, you know, we brought enough competitive fire in the second half. Yeah, we stole it for sure. They outplayed us.
He said all the right things, didn't he? He says they stole it. I say they took it. What do you say as a Blazer fan or a casual observer? Did last night have more to do with the Blazers not making plays down the stretch, or more to do with the Warriors making plays down the stretch? 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want to kick this around. I want to move past it, too, and I want to help you move past it. That's part of my job as a radio show host. It's not here to, I'm not here to ground you down. I'm not here to twist the knife that's in your back after a loss like that. I'm here to talk about how the Blazers kick forward from this. What can they learn from it? What will they do in game three? And game three, in my opinion, becomes a must win for the Blazers if they're going to make this a series at all. I thought last night was their opportunity. They had a chance to steal it, didn't they? That was the one they were going to get. Here were the Blazers playing the Warriors at Oracle Arena, up 15 at half. This was the one. Like, you know, I have this bet going on with the Dan Patrick Show in which, you know, either I'm taking them out to dinner or they're taking me out to dinner. And here I was looking at 1-1. I wasn't counting my chickens because Steph Curry's on the other side of the hen house. But I was sitting there going, we are two quarters away from me feeling pretty good about my wager with the Dan Patrick Show. And if you're a Blazer fan, it's bigger than that. It's your childhood. It's the emotional investment you have. It's all of those times when you were tuned into basketball games, with parents, with grandparents, wherever you may be, listening to Blazers games. You were in it with them last night, and I got to tell you, I did think about the Western Conference Finals in 2000 when I saw that 15 points on the scoreboard at halftime. I don't know if you did, but I want your phone calls. You have the floor here. We've got a great radio show. We're going to talk about Bull, Michael Avenatti speaking out. We've got the guy who broke the story on that front coming on the show. We're going to talk about George Horton's future at Oregon. We're going to talk about with Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard, and we're going to visit with Nick Krupke of Fox 12, who's going to talk to us about the Blazers. He's traveling back. I got back this morning. I'm happy to be back in this seat, not sitting in a hotel doing this radio show from Oakland, but doing this show from Portland. I haven't even been home yet. I just came right here to this studio because I want to get this thing in the rearview mirror. Let's put this game behind us. 503-417-7575 is the number. We start off with Gabe in Portland. Gabe, get on base. You're leading us off here.
Yeah, JC, thanks for bringing the energy. I know you must be tired. But, you know, I'm still encouraged by this Portland team. They are able to play competitively in Golden State, and I think that there's so much that you can hang your hat on and feel good about as a Blazers fan. This is not stuff to feel bad about. This is what champions do. That Golden State team didn't steal the game. They did exactly what they do, which is win in clutch situations. Portland needs to find ways to score down the stretch. In those last 3 minutes, I think they put up 2 or 3 points or something. That's not going to cut it against a team like Golden State, but still, for 3 quarters in game one and then for the entire game except for the last 3 minutes, of last night, we were playing and winning against the world champions, and I think that there's so much to feel good about still.
And I felt like the Warrior fans were nervous. I got to tell you, I was there in the arena, I was looking around Oracle, and this was not going to their script. This was not happening how they wanted it to happen. 503-417-7575. I have always said that I feel like teams that are championship caliber teams, before they become championship caliber teams, they sniff around it a little bit. You see that with a team that maybe makes the semifinals or maybe has a difficult loss at some level of the playoffs, or maybe a team that has an injury, but they kind of flirt around it before they break through. And you see it now maybe in the NFL. You watch, you know, the Patriots is sort of their waning. We see a team like the Rams who are kind of sniffing around it is what I mean. And I think the Blazers, if you want to draw parallels to that disappointment last night to another season, I mean, Damon Stoudemire came on this show just earlier this week, I think. My head is in a spin. I don't even know what day it is. I asked somebody today, is it Friday? And they're like, yeah. Okay, good. But Damon Stoudemire came on the show, and he talked about the similarities between this Blazers team and not the 2000 team that played the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, but the 99 team that got swept by the Spurs. And if you go back to game two of that Spurs-Blazers series, there was a heartbreak meltdown in game two of that series. The Blazers got beat and swept in four, but it was kind of that setup experience that set them up for the next year where they would come and be much more competitive. Are the Blazers sniffing around it a little bit? Are they learning? Terry Stotts last night in the postgame, I think he hit the nail on the head. He said, hey, the Warriors have seen everything. It's true. The Warriors look like a team that had seen everything last night in the second half. The Blazers, they got out of the first round. They beat Oklahoma City. Yeah, they had a great series with Denver that was highly entertaining. I thought it was the most entertaining thing in the playoffs so far. But what have they really seen on this level? Steph Curry was starting his 26th Western Conference Finals game last night. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum were starting their second. That was their second game on that level. Let's go to the phones. Marcus is in Dallas. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks, man. So I have the analogy for last night. Perfect. If anybody out there has ever dabbled in gambling a little bit and sat at a blackjack table, it was as if you had sat there for 2 hours and just taken the casino to the cleaners, just winning every hand. And then you got a little cocky, and you started playing a little bit bigger, and it all went away in three hands. That's what that third quarter felt like, that 13-0 run in 2 minutes. And then they did it again in the fourth. I think it was 11-0 in 3 minutes or something like that. So in other words, you can play 46 minutes of dominating these guys, and all they need is 2 minutes, 4 minutes of just turning it up to a notch that we do not have, and nobody has. That is why we lost. That is all that team needs. No team out there, really in any sport, can play terrible for 96% of the game, and then just turn it up to a notch that nobody else can compete with and beat you. That is exactly what the Warriors did. It felt helpless during that time. I'm thinking, man, the Blazers are going to get boat raced. They held on, and then it happened again in the fourth quarter. So really just a kick to the stomach, but it's hard to get really upset at the actual players, the game itself, because I just looked at that, and I'm like, you know what? We don't have that, and there's nothing we can do to stop it.
Nobody's got that gear. Draymond Green said it in the post game. He was asked about sort of the offense, and he was talking about the ability for the Warriors to score in flurries. He said they can make up 8 points in 1 minute. That's what they had decided. They're down eight with 4 minutes to go. That's not a big deal for them. And by the way, doesn't a minute feel like an eternity when you're playing the Warriors? I'm looking at the clock last night. In the third quarter, they're up 15, they're up 12, they're up 10. And I'm looking at the clock like, why isn't it running? Why isn't it running? I don't know if you had that feeling in watching that basketball game last night. I still felt up eight with 4 minutes to go that they were in trouble, because I worried that the Warriors were not going to let Damian Lillard beat them. And obviously, in the end, it was Andre Iguodala who made, I think, a great defensive play on Damian Lillard. They weren't going to let Lillard beat them. So who was going to make the shots? And C.J. McCollum missed six straight shots to finish the game. He missed one in the lane that was a shot he makes 9 times out of 10, 90 out of 100. And ultimately, I do put that on experience. If you've been there before, you're able to make those plays. And the only guy who was acting like he had been there before, frankly, was a guy who hadn't, but he had watched it, Seth Curry. Seth Curry was acting like he belonged in that game. Everybody else was kind of a little bit wide-eyed down the stretch as the lead evaporated. I thought Myers Leonard made some plays. But do you put it on the Blazers or do you give that to the Warriors? What do you do with it? And how much confidence do you have that the Blazers come back and win game three? Because on one hand, you can spin it. You can say, you know what? They just proved they can play the Warriors punch for punch on their home court. Blazers coming home, this is a good omen for the Portland Trail Blazers. On the other hand, you go, they just gave the Warriors the greatest sledgehammer punch in the first half that the Warriors have had in a playoff game, and then got knocked out in the second half. Eric is in Vancouver. Eric, what's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, I sort of agree with the previous caller. In the third quarter, you know, I felt like they really got blitzed. But then I think they took their best punch, got back up eight, and like you were just mentioning, I thought the execution down the stretch was actually really good. We missed one opportunity on a lob to Leonard, but you can't ask for better shots from your second-best player, CJ, wide open for two threes.
He just missed.
Missing that floater. He just missed shots. And, I mean, he's been easily our second most clutch player. And, I it's different than the third quarter where they were turning the ball over, getting pressed, and sort of fumbling under the pressure. They executed well, got wide open looks, and they didn't go in.
Do they win game three?
I think so. I think those big momentum shots in Portland, when you have the crowd behind you, you know, we've seen CJ and Dean and everybody on the home court hit those game-changing shots, and those are just shots that didn't go in, you know, with the road crowd. But all of our guys, I think, respond to the fans for it, and those shots go in at home, I think.
I'm looking at the play-by-play right now, because what struck me too, Eric, as you were talking, was it's not even a shot that I think was bad. It was a shot that wasn't taken. Late in the game, I want to say maybe with about 2 minutes to go, Seth Curry in transition has the ball at the three-point line with nobody within 8 feet of him. And he hesitated. There was just and he had been the best player on either side in this game. He was like plus 22 at the time. He just hesitated for a second, and then he passed the basketball. The Blazers eventually, I think Draymond Green made a very nice defensive play on a block. Blazers got nothing out of the possession. I keep going back to that three. And I keep saying the Blazers were not going to get a better shot in the last 2 minutes than a Seth Curry wide open three. It's those little opportunities that I keep coming back to, and those little things. And I think teams, I think good teams learn from that stuff. Will's in Eugene. Will, what's up, man?
Well, you know, I think here's the skinny, man. It comes down to this. Unselfish play. You hear these broadcasters talk about it all the time. You know, pass the ball around, and this is what wins basketball games. I think last night they needed to, honestly, I love Lillard, but they needed to somehow get the ball out of Lillard's hands, especially Draymond Green guarding him. If they would have got the ball out of Lillard's hands and done the unexpected, put it in someone else's hands, they might have hit a shot down the stretch that could have been, you know, the difference between going home 2-0 or, you know,
or getting a split. Now they're down 0-2, but I know what you mean. Look, Terry Stotts was asked about that after the game. He said, I didn't have a timeout. They put the ball in Lillard's hands. They took their chances. I didn't like Lillard isolated against one of the best defenders in the league. I would prefer to see a screen there. I would prefer to see, if not him penetrating and kicking, and they're going to give him a two there. You know, it was a tough situation. Once you're down three, they got Andre Iguodala. You have Damian Lillard. Iggy knows you're going to shoot a three. In the box score, the official scorer, I don't know if you guys caught this, the official scorer called it a missed 29-foot shot or a blocked 29-foot shot by Lillard. I didn't see a shot there. To me, a shot at the buzzer gives you hope. There's a... There, you know, the ball's in the air. Your stomach's in a knot. Is he going to make it? Are we tied? There was none of that. Iguodala just got contact with the ball, then stripped it. And you know what? If I'm the official, I don't call that either. I know people are upset saying, oh, it was a foul. This was a foul. That's not a foul. You got to let them play in that situation. All right. 503-417-7575. You got the bald-faced truth. Tell me, was it the Warriors' greatness? Or did the Blazers fumble that one last night? And how much confidence do you have in them in Game 3? Is the Blazers-Warriors series over, or is it just beginning? John Barry on the Dan Patrick Show earlier.
No, I don't think so. I think what you saw in that first half, Portland's certainly capable of being a team that can give this team fits. You know, Klay Thompson's not shooting the ball that great right now. Damian Lillard yet to really get going. He's having a hard time finding any open looks. The Warriors doing a really good job with him. Taking the ball out of his hands and making a crowd that he can't drive in. Portland can play a lot better. And that being said, they were down 6 in game 1 to start the fourth quarter. They're up 8 with 3.5 to go in game 2 on the road. So, I think they should feel pretty confident that they can go up to Portland and hold serve.
If the Blazers hold serve in Portland, the series gets interesting. Because I do think they've proven they can play with the Warriors on the road. 114-111 was the final score last night. But I kind of just think you get so many opportunities, and they blew one last night. Bobby, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought they blew it. I don't have as much confidence as some other fans do. I think Portland's going to win one of these games. I think probably the next one. I think tomorrow they'll win it. But I think Golden State's going to kind of pull off a win up here. So... I just think let's throw it out there. Golden State's a better team, period. Period. That's they're a better team. And if Klay Thompson does start to show up, you know, gets a little more consistent in that shot, Portland's toast. Even when they looked so good last night with an 8-point lead going in 3 minutes, I understand the confidence. And I do agree with you. Great experience. Maybe next year they'll win it. So I just don't have that confidence that they can take two games here. I think the Warriors are good enough. They've been there. It showed last night. They don't need to play well. Just the last 3 minutes, down by 8, they had it in the bag.
The stage felt too big for the play. There's a saying in the theater, the stage is too big for the play. Like, you don't put an elementary school play on Broadway. The Blazers are not ready for that stage. And I think it's not even, it's talent level. Yeah, they could get better at the three and the four. Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu, I think, are positions where the Blazers definitely need to upgrade. You want Yusuf Nurkic as your center, ideally. But I also think that, it's the mentality thing. I think CJ McCollum missing those shots in part was because CJ McCollum had never taken a bigger shot in his life. And all of a sudden he's pressing, thinking, oh, these are the Warriors. This is for the NBA Finals. We're going to steal a game in Oakland. No, you're not. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. James is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. James, what's up, man?
What's going on, John? How you doing?
Doing well.
Hey, real quick. Yeah, I agree with everything John Barry was saying because, you know, I have confidence that the series can go six or seven games, but winning four of the next five against Golden State just to me seems, you know, not plausible. But real quick, I had a question for you. One thing I don't understand with the way they're guarding Dame, and this was kind of brought up a little bit, why do they continue to have him bring the ball up the court as the point guard? I mean, I get he's your best player, but when they keep trapping him, to me it just seems like they could utilize him better, being a little bit more catch and shoot, moving off the ball and getting open and finding his spots from there. I mean, he's just getting hounded at the point. So, to me, you could bring, you know, Evan Turner up at the point, and he's a little bit tall. You know, he's a taller guy, so he's going to be able to see over Draymond in the trees. But that's all I got, John.
Yeah. I thought the Blazers, when they had Evan Turner on the court, were a little more dangerous last night because he is capable, even in a pick-and-roll situation, being the second guy, he's capable of, he's just a little bigger, and he can put the ball on the floor. He's more versatile. So I like that. I thought Terry Stotts did some good things. I thought their defensive plan was much better. I thought, you know, it was better than leaving Steph Curry wide open. You know, playing a game of horse. Hey, Bobby, you want to play a game of horse with me? Yeah. You want to play a game of horse with Steph Curry? No.
I know I watched the film and I rewatched the game one. It's really, I'm sorry. It's really hard for me to believe Terry Stotts, his game plan was to get off the best shooter ever to walk on this planet. That just dumbfounds me.
I keep thinking about what that meeting must have been like between he and like David Vanderpool, his defensive assistant. All right. Here's how the meeting went. Terry, what do you think we should do? Here's the thing. Steph Curry, his time is over. he's shot out. You know, he's making 3-pointers at a unprecedented clip. He's shooting them in awkward ways and making them. Guy's pretty good, but you know what? I think the law of averages will catch up to him, and I think it starts tonight. All right, let's leave him open. That's how that conversation had to go. You know?
What do you think the defensive coach, what do you think the look on his face was?
The photograph that is with my column today that run, if you can go to Oregon Live and look at it, I want you to look at the Blazers bench, and there's two Blazers assistant coaches who are just watching with the expression on their faces, oh crap, that's Andre Iguodala out there defending Dame. They know how it's going to end. It was going to be a miracle shot to tie it and send it to overtime. I do think the Blazers can win both of these games. I think it's capable. I think one of the key things is going to be how short is their memory? And the other thing is, are they going to be mad at what Kevin Durant did after the game or not? Did you guys see what Kevin Durant did? Did you see the video?
I did.
Did you see it this morning or was it deleted? Where did you see it? Last night?
I saw it this morning.
Okay, so somebody had it back up. SportsCenter deleted it, tweeted it out, and then deleted it. And it's Durant, you know, mocking the Blazers. And he, you know, frankly, being at Oracle, I didn't see him a whole lot. I walked by that Warriors locker room quite a bit because it's right by the media room. And I saw Durant standing there after the game. I saw Draymond come in. I saw them slapping backs and joking. I didn't quite catch what they were saying until later when I watched it on video. Durant was making fun of the conversation he had with CJ McCollum prior to the year, in which he said, hey, you guys don't worry about what's happening at the top. You know, you don't want to go to the finals. You're not going to go to the finals. Will the Blazers take that personally? Because if they do, I do think they'll come back and win game three. And then I think game four becomes a really interesting game. Like this series, the compelling nature of this series is not done. Because the Blazers play their best basketball with their back to the wall. And I asked one a Blazers employee last night. I was sitting down. I was eating before the game in the pregame meal area in the arena. Some Blazers employees are sitting there, some executives. I said, why do you think your team plays better with its back against the wall? Plays best when it's offended, chip on their shoulder, back against the wall. And I didn't really get a good response. And then I have a theory on it. I think they play better because they're a bunch of misfits. Damian Lillard is a mid-major guy who got overlooked. He had to work harder than everybody else to get where he is. CJ McCollum went to a college that had never produced an NBA player, had to work harder than everyone else to prove himself. You've got guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless and Enes Kanter, who are all kind of outliers. Like, if we're putting together an NBA version of Dinner for Schmucks, it's the Blazers. And I think those guys are where they are because they are grinders. Because I think all things being equal, there are a whole bunch of guys who have the talent level of Mo Harkless or Al-Farouq Aminu or Enes Kanter who are out of the league. Why are those guys still in the league? You know why? Because they're relentless. They're grinders. They keep fighting. They keep working. And so that's why I think this Blazers team, oddly, is positioned in a way that makes it better than other teams when it has its back against the wall. Because it has guys that will not quit, who did not get along on athletic ability alone. Who on this Blazers roster mailed it in and got passed on athletic ability alone? None of them. They're not good enough. That's what makes them good in the crunch. Your phone calls. Leave it right here. Your phone calls on the Blazers, 503-417-7575. Coming up, we'll visit with Brandon Kammerman of KBAL, who had an interaction with Michael Avenatti, the attorney who is at the center of the lawsuit, I guess, or the allegations with Nike and Bull Bull and Stormy Daniels and, you know, all that. What do we do with Avenatti is basically it. What do you do with a guy who has no credibility? We'll talk about that coming up. Jose Canseco had no credibility. He ended up being right. Grain of salt is what I say. Let's go to Dre, who's in Portland. Dre, what's on your mind?
Jay, you said it. The Blazers are sniffing around, right? There's levels to the game, my man. There's levels. My homeboy called me the other day. He was like, there's levels to this game. The Blazers aren't there yet, but you're right, though. They're sniffing around. And Damon said it. He said it. If they keep this team together, add some pieces to it, they got a chance to do something. That's another issue that's wrong with the NBA is they're quick to get rid of guys just because, like, oh, it didn't work. Let it marinate a little bit. It's going to be all right. This steak going to be good.
Who's the core of this team? Who is it when you say – keep it together. Who are we talking about?
I'm saying Lillard and McCollum is the core of this team, man. And you got to throw in Zach.
Yep.
And Nurkic. Zach got that. He got that dirty in him. When I watched that young dude play, he got that dirty in him. Like if somebody messes with my teammate, I'm on you. You know what I mean? Like he got that in him. You need dudes like that. But you said it best though. They sniffing around. It ain't going to happen this year. But if they keep this team together, though, it's going to happen. Thanks, Jay.
Appreciate the phone call. I'll say this. When I look at the core of this team, I could do without Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu. Sorry to say, but that's 40% of your starting lineup. It doesn't do it for me. And I think they need a player. They need players at the 3 and 4 who can absolutely punish the opposition for doing what the Warriors are trying to do to Damian Lillard. There should be somebody there shooting threes, capable of putting the ball on the floor, who can just kill you if you're gonna trap Dame high. I also think I like the Blazers' role players better than those two starters. I like Rodney Hood.
Yeah, I really like Rodney Hood, but we're not going to be able to.
Yeah, the right number. I like Rodney Hood.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
I also think Enes Kanter is a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll take him as a backup. But
he's solid as
but
a backup.
But he's going to command 10 or 11 million
a year.
Yeah,
he's not either. He's not going to come back either.
And the other guy I really like is Seth Curry. He has really grown on me, but I got to be honest with you. So do the Warriors fans. The Warriors fans left the game last night going, can we get Seth Curry next year and have both of the Currys?
I've said that before. If they don't re-sign Durant, I've said that I wouldn't be surprised to see Seth down at Golden State backing up his brother. They'll have the money to pay him.
Kevin Durant's got to go.
He's gone. Let him go to New York. I want him to go to New York.
They don't need him. I kind of feel like they're playing nice with him as a teammate. I also kind of feel like they don't like him.
He's got such thin skin. He's such a baby. I want him to go
to New
York.
You don't like him,
do
you?
Oh, I don't like him at all. He's got...
You'd say it to his face, wouldn't
you? I would. Oh, easy. Easy. But wait a minute. He'd call the security and get me kicked out wherever I was at. So I know that, you know, he'd back that up. But he's a weak effort.
You know it's a who's a scary individual? DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
I ran into him last night before the game. I turned a corner in the arena, and they have these little lecterns that are like where the security guards sit, like then they check your pass to get from one area to the next. DeMarcus Cousins was sitting there. He was wearing all camouflage. He had a camouflage hat on, and he was eating like a bowl of rice. And I turned the corner, and he is just a physically imposing guy. And it was him in the camos sitting there. And I was just like, I almost took a picture of him, but I was afraid he'd get mad and chase after me. I was like, I don't need the trouble.
Yeah, you don't want that guy on you.
Let's go to Mike in Portland. Mike, what's up?
Say, John, man, I should have put a cross, man, around your neck, man, the last time I talked to you. Because, man, you done got bit and got infected, man, with this Blazer nonsense. Say, man, check it out, man. You done changed, man. You're a Blazer zombie. But let me tell you something, man. I'm talking about the heart of a champion. If you notice after the game, Damian Lillard was holding his head down. And CJ was holding his head up. So Damian don't have the heart of a champion, man. And another thing that happened is that old school basketball, American-style basketball, Golden State was playing that. They were dominating the paint. They were lobbing and doing that. And so the European-style basketball, where they're doing jump shots out at the 3 points, that wasn't working. And that's why the Blazers lost. And say, John, one last thing before I leave, man. The Blazers, this whole scenario, man, remind me of this Spartacus movie I watched, man, with Kirk Douglas in it, where it was an uprising and they tried to overthrow the Roman tower. But the Romans shut them down, and then they said something really profound to Spartacus. He said, a slave you were, a slave you shall remain. And that's what I see with the Blazers. They're trying to throw off the shackle of mediocrity. They can't do it.
When you're watching Spartacus, isn't that a bunch of guys who are all half naked and oiled up?
That's true, man. Trying to get out of, trying to overthrow, man, of being slaves, man. They were trying to be free. And that's what the Blazers are doing. They're trying to overthrow mediocrity. But they can't do it.
You got to watch that movie with your lady friends. They'll like that movie.
Talk to you later, man.
You're just ignoring me. Paul's insurance. I haven't changed, first of all. People are like, oh, why are you being so soft on the Blazers? I'm not being soft on the Blazers. I just said dinner for schmucks. Give me a break. They blew the game last night. They should have won that game. They let it slip through their fingers. And, you know, the Warriors can say they stole it. CJ McCollum was terrible down the stretch. He missed 6 shots. But I also like where this season has gone. They made the Western Conference Finals. What am I supposed to do? Sit here and say how disappointed I am that this 3 seed that played without its center, had the owner die before the season, had Nurkic break his leg, had an assistant coach, Jonathan Yim, get in a car accident. What am I supposed to say? You know, this is a really resilient team that has played well and has taken us all the way to, what is this, the 17th of May? Normally by now, we're like, summer! Summer's on.
What do we talk about?
Yeah, like thank you.
Exactly.
Between the Blazers, college baseball, Michael Avenatti, we got some things to talk about today. More of your phone calls. We'll talk Avenatti coming up as well with Brandon Kammerman of KVAL in Eugene. He had an interaction with the guy on the Bull Bull front. Leave it here. Phone lines are jam jacked and loaded. We do have one open. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. Michael Avenatti in the news. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports reporting yesterday. Avenatti has said that Oregon, the University of Oregon, has opened an investigation into Nike and Bull Bull. We will be talking with Mr. Brandon Kammerman of KVAL. He is the sports director down in Eugene. He had an interaction with Avenatti yesterday. Brandon will be joining us momentarily. Also, Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard will be with us. I want to ask Austin about George Horton, the baseball coach. I want to ask him about the Auburn-Oregon football game. There are some people who believe Oregon should not play a football game against a school from the state of Alabama, given what's gone on in Alabama. Politics and football. Do you support Oregon making a statement on that front? We'll talk about that coming up. Paul's in Sherwood. He's going to start us off. Paul, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm glad I got to go after Mike. You know, I was a long time on hold, and then Mike's there, and I feel like Mike's one of those guys that could move to Hawaii and tell the locals how the ocean there sucks compared to the Willamette River. It's like wherever he grew up is like this golden heaven, and this Northwest just doesn't rub him the right way. But anyway, nothing has changed in this basketball series at all. We still got to win one in Golden State. That's it. We take care of home court. We still got to win one in Golden State. That's how it is. We win both of these. And there's nothing those first two games that doesn't make me think we can't win these two games at home. They were right there in both of those games. And that's all I got.
Yeah, look, and I think that, look, if you're looking for a silver lining, the Blazers blew game one because felt like in the fourth quarter they just didn't finish. Did they not know how to finish? Did the Warriors just put their foot on the gas? Whatever. Felt like game one they could have played a much better game. Bad defensive plan. Came back in game two, were much better. A correction was made. They were much better. And in fact, they were pretty damn good in the first half in opening up a big lead. And Seth Curry got going and Lillard had flashes where he looked like himself. I thought he shot a few too many of those long ones for my liking. It was a little desperate feeling. But, you know, much better effort, but just didn't finish. Again, sniffing around it. But ultimately, if you're a Blazer fan who's spinning a silver lining, I mean, you feel good about him coming back to Moda Center. And if they compete in Game 3 and win Game 3, Game 4 becomes very interesting. But if they lose Game 3, this series is over.
I think they'll win Game 3. I think that's the game they'll win. And you're right. 4 becomes interesting. I don't have as much confidence as the last caller, but I love it. I hope I'm wrong.
I want to make Paulie nervous about our bet. 1-1 would have made him nervous. Like, the Blazers winning last night's game, that would have made him nervous. Because my whole plan was Blazers were going to split the first two, and I thought they would win games 3 and 4 then in Portland. And I thought Portland would be ahead 3-1 in this series. And at that point, it's a dicey series for the Warriors. It's yeah. Pressure. But the problem is there's none of that pressure now. And so I think my narrative on how the Blazers win this series is crumbling, making me look dumb. Don's in Wilsonville. Don? What's up?
Hey, Jenny.
you doing, Don?
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, you were right about Misfits. You know, Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson was talking about Steph Curry's road to the NBA, and boy, that guy was cut a lot. He had to work 2 years in the D League. He's a misfit, man, and I'm telling you, I would do, if I was the Blazers management, I would do to rework contracts and this and that to keep that guy on the Blazers team, because that'll give us a, you know, an arch rival, you know, a team that we can, you know, kind of like Oregon and Washington Huskies, you know, arch rival. We have the Curry.
Wait a minute, isn't Oregon's arch rival Oregon State?
Well, you know, in the last 2 years, 3 years, Washington has really, the Huskies has really put it to Oregon.
Do you think the Huskies view Oregon as their arch rival, or do they view Washington State as the arch rival?
I think Oregon, because Washington State's always been terrible.
In the last couple of years, Washington State's been right there with them. I don't know. I don't know. I kind of feel, I know what you mean, Don, but you're going to spur a whole nother discussion here. But I know what you mean, but I would be curious from the Husky fan standpoint if they view Oregon or Washington State as more of the rival.
Well, it's an in-state thing. You can't deny that. If you have an out-of-state rival, I think the Huskies would be it.
Well, there you go. All right. Appreciate the phone call. Here's what I mean, like, by misfits. They're misfits and castaways. I think that's what this team should be. I think we should label them that. And I don't think they'd be offended by it. Like, Damian Lillard, I think if you went back to him and said, hey, would you have rather gone to UCLA than Weber State? I don't think he would have. I think he would say, I like the path I took. I saw his high school yearbook when I was in Oakland. And on his, you know how each senior gets to put a little phrase on there? They asked him what player he compares himself to, and he said, nobody, because I'm still learning. He had that humility as like a high school senior, like a 17-year-old kid. Like, he didn't say, I compare myself to Gary Payton or, you know. And by the way, I saw Gary Payton inside the arena. Gary Payton, during the game, was bellied up to the bar on the club level watching the game on TV by himself. And I thought, how weird is that to have a Hall of Fame NBA player sitting at the bar inside Oracle Arena with a beanie cap on watching the game like he's sitting at, you know, he's sitting at Brick's Tavern watching the basketball game.
You didn't have any desire to saunter up? And
I did saunter up. I said hello to him. And then later I was like, should I just sit there and write a column about sitting with Gary Payton? But then I thought, you know what? Blazer fans don't care about Gary Payton. Mark's in Portland. Mark, what's on your mind?
It's, how you doing? Hey, it sounds like you're taking phone calls from Washington, the Washington General fans right now.
What'd you think at halftime last night? Where was your head?
I, again, fell into the Blazer Mania thing. I felt in my heart that if they won that game, that they'd have a long shot's chance of winning the series, but it was like the 91 game when Kersey and Cliff Robinson fumbled the ball out of bounds against the Lakers. It was 1999. That was an even more heart-wrenching loss. But back then I was younger, and I just thought the Blazers were better, and they're not. And everybody that's bad-mouthing Damian Lillard, it reminds me of John Elway in the 80s when he took those three candy-ass teams to Super Bowls, and everybody called him a choke artist. He was the best player in the league. I'm not saying Damian can't play better, but he had 10 assists last night. You know, the last play didn't go our way, but he's doing everything he can. I mean, you guys understand basketball more than I do. If you switched Lillard with Steph Curry and had them switch teams, do you think that things would change? I mean, Golden State would probably still almost be as dominant as they are because
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about Damian Lillard. It's about getting the big man, the guy that can post up down low and can, you know.
I actually think the most valuable player in the Warriors is Draymond Green.
Yeah. He's Dennis Rodman with a 3-point shot.
He's a problem, and he's a passer.
Yeah.
There was a sequence of like three possessions last night on both ends of the court where he blocked a shot. He came down, he drove to the basket and got a bucket, came back down, made a great defensive play, went back down and made a great pass. I mean, it was, he owned that game down the stretch.
Am I still on?
Yeah, you're still on.
Hey, I think he's hustle and muscle, and you know, he's a guy that's kind of doesn't get talked about a lot because you know, Curry and Klay Thompson, and they have so many stars, it's ridiculous. I think the reason Durant was going off is because he knows that he's going to be able to rest probably the rest of this series and be ready for the finals, and he's going to the finals in his mind, and he's letting the Blazers know it. He's taunting them, no doubt, but I mean, I would have done the same thing. You know, I mean, it kind of feels like this series is over, and I'm rooting for my wallet now because I did think I got pretty good odds.
We got to go quick, but what'd you bet?
They were 180 to make 100, and I put the rent money on it for the Golden State to win the championship. They have to beat Milwaukee, which I know nothing about.
All right, we got a break.
Following your lead.
Good luck to you. Good luck.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the bald-faced truth.
Bull, bull, Michael Avenatti. Situation going on. Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, yesterday reporting that Michael Avenatti is claiming that the University of Oregon is under investigation or has opened an investigation into Bol Bol. Could be a matter of semantics because Brandon Kammerman of KVAL, the sports director there, reached out to Oregon, and Oregon told him, no, there's no investigation. And, of course... I'm here with Brandon Kammerman. He is the sports director at KVAL, KVAL in Eugene. Brandon, thanks for giving us some time. You had an interaction with Michael Avenatti. Tell us how it started. What was your first introduction? You're on the job. What happens?
Yeah, sure. I was actually watching the Blazers game. It was, I think, early second half. Things were looking good at that time.
Oh, amen.
And, you know, I had put out earlier, reached out to the university because of a tweet that was put out by Yahoo Sports, Dan Wetzel, and it was regarding the Avenatti thing that's sort of been ongoing for the last several months where he is accusing Nike of paying players at Oregon, including Bol Bol and other schools. And he had updated it by saying that the university is opening an investigation and that Michael Avenatti is willing to talk to the university and kind of go over the details of that. So I reached out to the university and they flatly denied it and said that there is no investigation and that they did reach out to Avenatti. And so then anyways, I put that out there, that exactly that they are not opening an investigation, but that they did reach out to him and said, if you have anything, let us know. But they said they didn't get anything that would require an investigation. Kind of just put it out that way.
I think you did a good job because initially I saw you tweeted out, like everybody else did, the Wetzel tweet saying, hey, Avenatti is saying this. Then you went one step further than most people who were just sitting back and you said, okay, I'm going to reach out to Oregon. You get a response from them. You put that out. What happens next?
Yeah, so then he direct messages me and sent me a screenshot of what he says is an email with the general counsel at the University of Oregon. And in the screenshot, it basically says what the university told me happened, which is that they did reach out to him and they asked him to provide any evidence or any further documentation and that they would be happy to meet with him. Again, this is what the university told me they did. And so then Avenatti sent me a screenshot. Again, all I'm seeing is a screenshot. There's stuff cut off above the screenshot that he sent me and below.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not seeing the full email. And it's them asking him, you know, for more evidence. And then he really, you know, wasn't he says they played me, the university played me. Again, all I did was say this is what the university's saying in response to what he said. They played me, you know, kind of got condescending. And the whole time I just said, you know, I'd love to see the whole email. If you could just send me the whole email, because there is skepticism. You know, you understand this in journalism. You know when someone has an axe to grind, which he does with Nike. They're in a lawsuit right now. And so he has an axe to grind. That doesn't mean he's not telling the truth, but you come in with skepticism. And so when I see half an email or a third of an email or who knows, it causes me to be skeptical. So I said, I just want to see the whole email. I'm willing to take into account what you're saying, but you got to send me the whole email. And he never did.
Our guest is Brandon Kammerman. He is the sports director at KVAL in Eugene. You did a great job on this because I think you were first in getting the statement from Oregon, and you did the right thing. What's the reaction that you got? And also, what the hell do we do with Avenetti? Because, you know, it's like Jose Canseco saying everyone was cheating in steroids. You know, you kind of believe him, but you look at him and you go, all right, yeah, are you credible?
Yeah, and again, like I said, Journalism 101, you look at the source, in this case, you know, a well-known source, and you say, does this guy have an axe to grind? Is there any reason? Does he have motivation beyond telling the truth? Now, you know, you already know that background on him. And again, I never at any point said he was lying and he might be telling the truth. But you got to provide more than what he's provided. I mean, even the documents he put out a couple months ago accusing Nike of paying players were all screenshots, were very limited in what they provided. And so certainly I have skepticism about what he's doing, and clearly he has an axe to grind with Nike. You know, Nike's accusing him of extortion. I mean, it's an ugly situation. And Avenatti, we've seen going back to the Stormy Daniels situation and his quote-unquote relationship with President Trump and the way he kind of went after that. He certainly likes the limelight. He doesn't shy away from it. And I think, you know, in this case, he was a little unfair with me. You know, it didn't bother me, but it was a little unfair, because all I was doing was saying what Oregon said, and then I said, I want you to tell me what you got. And he never really did.
What do we do with college basketball? Because I think there, you know, I was surprised by the public's reaction when all of this first broke, that a lot of people were empathizing with the players, saying, hey, if they're getting a little money, that's okay. The NCAA says, no, that's not okay. Oregon's got to run down every lead that is out there. It feels like we're on new ground here, and I'm not sure where it's going to end up. What do you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, no question there has to be drastic changes, and I think it's inevitable. It's unfortunate that something like this, and now an FBI investigation, and we've got strange audio tapes with Sean Miller and Will Wade situation, that would have to be the cause to make things change. But, you know, I think this also coincides. I mean, we can't, you know, ignore the whole NBA rules and the having to play a year, the one it done's, and how that factors into this, because that is a factor. And whereas, say, in football, college football, you know they're going to be there for 3 years, generally speaking, at least, the players, before they go to the NFL. In the NBA, it's so immediate. So you get guys who are literally there who, in a year, are going to be making a lot of money in the NBA. And so there's just so much money, and it's so immediate that it causes major problems. Now, obviously, I know they're talking about it, and the NBA is talking about changing the one-and-done rule, maybe, again, letting players go right out of high school. We'll see if that has any effect. But the NCAA has to address this problem. It's ugly. It doesn't look good. And we got guys like Will Wade and Sean Miller who still have jobs, who just seem to be in really bad situations legally and then within the NCAA. So things have to change.
Our guest, Brandon Kammerman, he is the sports director at KVAL in Eugene. Let me get off topic a little bit, talk about Oregon and your job there. What is it like to be the sports director at a television station in a college town?
You know, it's a lot of fun. I actually came from Alabama, working in Tuscaloosa. So, go from one big college town to another, and, there are similarities and there are differences. No question covering the SEC is just kind of its own sort of avenue over there. But in terms of just covering college sports, it's fun. I love it for one reason, cover a lot of different sports. You know, being in a college town gives you the opportunity to cover softball, volleyball, things that, you know, aren't necessarily, if you go to a pro town, what you're going to be covering on a normal basis. So I enjoy that. Now, what's really exciting is I'm coming in from at a really good time and getting an opportunity to, you know, be here when there's a lot of teams at Oregon that have high potential going into next season, and, you know, covered the women's basketball run this past year and obviously what the men did as well. And then, you know, high expectations for the football program in terms of covering it. It's fun and rewarding. You know, you run into your challenges. I think, John, as well as anyone, that over the years covering college sports has maybe become more tough because they've been more restrictive in access. I think that's the case certainly at Oregon, and I even see that in a little way at Oregon State, but that's kind of going on all around the country, and so it makes it a little tougher, but you still get the opportunities to cover athletes who aren't pros and sometimes stumble a little more than pros and aren't as polished, but are really kind of intriguing personalities in a lot of different ways.
You went to UCLA undergrad. You were a theater and film television major. You follow up at Arizona State. You get a master's there in communications. You know the Pac-12. Is the Pac-12 going to bounce back in the near future in college football?
Well, we're going to have to see if there's any changes with the leadership. They've made some questionable moves over the years. There's no question about it. I love the Pac-12, and I think there's just so many great things about the Pac-12. But I've said this before, is you got to win in football and basketball. I mean, you just have to. And again, I was just in the SEC, and I remember when I got to the SEC, when I got to Alabama, their commissioner, Greg Sankey, said they were bad in basketball. They had a really bad season. They had one team that was any good, and it was Kentucky. Kentucky was really good. Every other team was really bad. And he said, we got to change this. We're great in football, but we have to change this. And then a few years later, they have 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, even this year, you know, you had elite teams like Tennessee, LSU. Those aren't normal teams. It's always Kentucky. And that just was a few years. He addressed the problem. He said there is a problem. And the problem is what I hear from a lot of Pac-12 is this is cyclical. This isn't the problem. It'll come around. And I don't know if I necessarily see it that way. I think there is an issue when you're not winning in football and basketball because that provides a lot of money to the conference.
This bowl thing, it makes sense on paper. It didn't make sense to me when he went there. I thought, why is he going there? And I said, well, maybe it's a Nike thing. Maybe Oregon's making him promises that other places won't about playing time. And they understand he's a one-and-done guy. But is this going to be a lingering problem for Oregon, or does Oregon very quickly put this in the rearview mirror and Avenatti disappear at some point?
Again, I think Avenatti has to provide more. I mean, he just can't provide these screenshots where we don't get to see when things are taken out of context. And again, it makes me skeptical that he really has something that's as damning as he says it is. If he does, and if he really has legitimate, you know, documentation that shows that Nike was paying associates of Bol Bol and it was made clear and all that. Yeah, I think it could be a problem. And then we just talk about how much did Dana Altman know? How much did the people within the athletic department know, if anything? And those are always tough things to prove, you know. I mean, it's the same problem we're having with Sean Miller, even though we have audio tapes of him saying things. And we're still trying to prove how much did he know. Same with Will Wade, LSU. So I think it could be a problem, but not where it stands right now. We just don't have enough. And again, we have a lawsuit that's pending of Nike saying that Michael Avenatti extorted them. I mean, that's where we're at. Nothing really deep into what happened at Oregon, and we're not even into that yet. And again, as this all started, Oregon says there is no investigation, that there's no evidence. They made that clear. They don't make that clear if they do think there's evidence. They wouldn't say that because it could come back to bite them. They said there is no evidence requiring an investigation.
Brandon Kammerman, sports director, KVAL. You can see him there in Eugene. Brandon, I really appreciate you making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Man. Bobby, what are we going to do with Michael Avenatti? Right now, face value. I tried to reach out to Avenatti. I want him on the show.
He's not. And come on.
He might. He's doing all these other interviews. He tends to lurk around in the DMs. What do the kids call it? He's sliding into the DMs. Is that right? How do you say it?
Yeah, that's right. Sliding into the DMs.
I said that right?
Wow.
Look at me. Is that the same of all things? Like, is it DMs on Instagram or what is that?
Yeah, DMs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anything.
So when I put the headline on this interview that goes on Oregon Live,
I could put, with a straight face, Michael Avenatti slips into the DMs of a Eugene TV reporter.
Yeah, it would probably appeal to the younger audience.
All right.
I have a question. I think it'd be great if you had him on, because one of the things I have about this whole story, especially with the Ducks and Bull Bull, is what advantage does he have not telling the truth about this?
Yeah. But why has he only been willing to do screenshots at this point? Why hasn't he done, like, you know, he did a document dump. He did a thing where he sent it out. But it's all stuff that could be fabricated. Like, yeah. He hasn't produced anything that... Yeah. You know, you couldn't do with a computer.
Yeah, screenshots can be photoshopped easily.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, what she said. Yeah. All right. Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard. We're going to, and listeners, you're going to get a chance to weigh in on Avenatti. Don't just wait for that. Austin Meek's going to weigh in next, though. Same topic. We'll continue this conversation. How big a problem is this for Oregon? One of my favorite guests to have on, Austin Meek, sports columnist, Eugene Register Guard. I'm going to pepper you on a variety of topics. Are you ready? This is going to be like a game show. You ready?
All right. Bring it on. I'm ready.
Michael Avenatti versus the University of Oregon. Go.
Boy, that's a real mud fight there, isn't it? Look, clearly you got a case of a guy who's looking for some headlines. And has some spotlight based on some other things that he's been involved with, and you know, he's kind of got the University of Oregon sort of in a tricky position here, because if you don't play ball with this guy, then he can say, look, the university is ignoring me. I've got this information that is important to them, and they don't even care what I know. But if you do play ball with him, what are you getting into? I think that's the question. Is this a guy that the University of Oregon really wants to be involved with? Not really. But he does have, claims to have some information that ought to be kind of interesting to the U of O.
If it proves true that Bull Bull took money, does the rank and file fan empathize with him or castigate him?
I think the rank and file fan would say good for Bull Bull. For getting paid. I mean, the guy played 9 games. Like, what's Oregon going to have to do? Are they going to, like, vacate that game against Texas Southern? The average Duck fan, their attachment to Bull Bull now is just about, the fact that he picked your school. It's not even about really what he did when he wore an Oregon uniform, because he didn't really do anything. It's about just the fact that, that excitement that Duck fans had when a guy of this caliber committed to Oregon. So I don't think anybody at Oregon is going to be surprised or disappointed or upset with Bull Bull if it turns out that he made a little bit of money while he was here.
I promised you a game show, and then, like, I didn't have game show sound effects. So I'm sorry for that. So, like, every time you answer, I feel like we should have, like, hey.
Yeah, there you go. George, a buzzer too, if I get one wrong.
George Horton at Oregon, baseball coach. I know the program came back with him, but we're watching 7th place, 8th place, 8th place, 8th place. How long is this George Horton thing going to go on?
It's hard for me to see George Horton coming back next year, but it's also been a couple years in a row that I've said that, and he's ended up coming back. George is well regarded within the athletic department and among the people who make the decisions at Oregon. And that's become apparent with how patient they have been in continuing to give him chances to turn this thing around. And it's felt for a couple years now kind of like, hey, this is George's last chance. He's got to get this thing going. But Oregon just has proven they're going to be really patient and give him every opportunity to turn it around. This is the last guaranteed year of his contract, I believe. There's an optional year if the school chooses to bring him back. I kind of felt like this was NCAA tournament or bust this year. It's going to be really hard for them to get in unless they sweep UCLA to end the season. So I kind of feel like the change is coming, but I've just learned not to count out George Horton. You know, he's the kind of coach where you get him backed up in a corner and he's able to do something to buy himself a little bit more time.
Austin Meek of the Eugene Register, the Eugene Register Guard, with us. The softball program, Mike White, is that all in the rearview mirror for Oregon, or is this going to be an ongoing story?
I don't think it's ever fully in the rearview mirror until that team gets back to the College World Series, because they would have been there this year if Mike White had been back. They might have been the number one seed again. Now they're out of the postseason. They had a losing record. I think you can look at the future of that program and say they've got some building blocks. They've got some good young players who emerged this year. They've got some good recruits coming in. I think, you know, the future is better for that program. But unless they get back to where they were under Mike White, there's always going to be people saying, how did you let this guy get away?
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard with us. I should have gave you a correct answer there. Hold on. All right. Trailblazers coming home after a disappointing game two. They're down 2-0. Do they show some fight, or is this series over?
I think they get these two at home. Maybe I'm crazy, but I felt like all along the Blazers were going to give the Warriors everything they could handle in this series. You know, last night's disappointing because they've got every chance to win that game. And, you know, if you come home with a split, coming out of Golden State, then you feel like you've got the series right where you want it. And now you've got, you know, totally the back against the wall. If they don't get both of these at home, then I think the series is over, but I'm not going to count them out quite yet because I felt all along that this was going to be a 7-game series. I think the Blazers can still do that.
Judges had some indecision on that one. Oregon plays Auburn on August 31st. We're starting to hear some cries from people who say, given what has gone on politically in the state of Alabama, is it a good idea for the Ducks to be in business with a school from that state? Does that get any traction, or is that a story that evaporates within a few days?
You know, that's a really interesting angle that I had not thought about. I tell you what, if there's any place in the country where that would be a storyline, it's probably in Oregon. I don't know. Isn't that what makes college football great, is when you've got teams from different parts of the country that have totally different perspectives and worldviews, and you sort of have that culture clash? I mean, that's totally what it's going to be when Oregon and Auburn play, is two totally different cultures. And I mean, in some ways, you set that political stuff aside when you're talking about two college football teams on the field. But in other ways, you can't set that aside, you know, because that's what it is. It's always a little bit bigger than just two teams on the field. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that.
You know, I only brought it up because I've got people in the state of Oregon who are reaching out to me saying, you should pick up the flag for this. I'm kind of floating it out there. You know, it's interesting. It's different. I just don't know if you can stop the machine that is college football. And who does that ultimately hurt? Does it garner attention? I mean, it would be a pretty strong statement. And you're right. No other state in the union is going to do it except for the state of Oregon. If it comes to that, Austin Meek is with us, Eugene Register Guard sports columnist. All right, before I cut you loose, Jonathan Smith made some news this week. He told Nick Daschle of the Oregonian that he's not a big social media guy. He'd rather make a phone call. Is that an approach that is going to help Oregon State, or is Jonathan Smith missing the boat by not meeting recruits where they are?
Well, it's one of those things where I don't think that there's one right way to do it. Can you succeed doing it the way Jonathan Smith wants to do it? Yeah, I think you probably can. You know, I covered a guy at Kansas State, Bill Snyder, who didn't know what social media was until pretty late in his coaching career. he won a lot of games that way by recruiting players who were not necessarily, the consensus top recruits or the guys that everybody was chasing on Twitter. But I tell you what, that's a hard way to do it. If you're asking me, as a fan, which would I rather? I'd rather have a coach who was pursuing every possible, every possible avenue to recruit the best players to my school. And if I felt like, the coach was putting himself at a disadvantage by, ignoring an avenue that a lot of other schools are using, I'd probably have to scratch my head and say, are you doing everything that you possibly can to recruit at the highest level? So we'll see. Maybe this will work for Oregon State. Maybe they feel like in this state they have to be different, that if they're trying to do things exactly the way Oregon is doing them, that they're always going to finish second. I think there's some validity to that. But when I see that kind of stuff, I just think, are you really doing absolutely everything that you can do if you're not engaging in this particular area?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It's such a dilemma because sort of the brand of his program is down home, grassroots. I'm going to pick up the phone. We're going to have a conversation. But that's not where 16 to 25-year-old kids are living.
Yeah, it plays great with the fan base. I think the Oregon State fan base really connects with that. But it becomes a question of who's your audience, because – when you're recruiting, you're not recruiting your fans. your hardcore fans are already on board. You're recruiting the players who are going to come in there and win games for you. So I think in some ways Oregon State has to make that distinction. Is, there's some messaging that we do for our fans, and absolutely if that connects with the fan base, great. But maybe that's not the messaging that's going to connect the most with the recruits.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard, thank you for your time. You're always great and available. We're sorry you didn't win the grand prize, but we got some parting gifts for you. We got a pair of acid wash jeans, and we got also we don't have a trip anywhere. We can send you to Woodburn. Well, okay. We actually could send you to Woodburn.
Well, I'm going to be going through there tomorrow anyway, so maybe I'll try door number 2 on that one.
Are you coming to the Blazer game?
I am. Yeah, going to be there.
I'll see you on press row.
All right. Thanks, man.
Austin Meek, he's the best. See how good he is? Just peppered him. Bah, 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 bah. So you're the listener. You just heard that. I asked him about Michael Avenatti and the claims about Bull Bull in Oregon. You want to weigh in on that? It's your turn. Meek just had his turn. 503-417-7575. George Horton, the Ducks baseball coach. Want to weigh in on that? Should George come back? Is it a big enough deal? How about the softball program at Oregon? Is that story behind Oregon, or is it still developing? And how about Jonathan Smith? He told Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com this week, that, he's just not a social media guy. Is he missing the boat by not meeting 16 and 17-year-old kids where they're living? 503-417-7575. Plus, I asked him, are the Blazers done? He said no. He thinks they're going to win the next 2 games. What do you think? All of those things. It's a Friday variety show. You got the bald-faced truth. Maybe we should do Friday as more of a potpourri.
Is that too,
yeah, that's too,
yeah.
Can we call it Friday in the 1 o'clock hour? I should bring on a guest every Friday. I just make things up like this over the last 12 years. What if we did this? Tell me if this is a good idea or a bad idea. In the 1 o'clock hour every Friday, we bring on a guest like Austin Meek. We pepper him with like 7 different topics, and then we let the listeners weigh in on any of the 7 topics. What do you think about that?
I think it should just be free for all Friday, and you can literally call
fire
it about
today.
Anything.
It's on fire. I like that. Actually, I love that idea.
You take over. Just come down here. I'll go down there and podcast.
I have something that I do want to say, though. I want to go to that Oregon-Auburn game because it'll be my first Auburn game, like in the stadium.
Well, then why don't you go?
I'm going, but I need somebody to go with. That's what I'm saying.
Isn't it a neutral site game?
Yeah, it is. It's at Dallas.
Oh, you mean you haven't been to Dallas, to Jerry World?
Wait, I thought it was going to be an
neutral site.
It's in Dallas.
You could still go to Dallas. Jerry World's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody wants to take me, that would be great.
Well, how about you just get credentialed and cover it for the station?
Yeah, there you go.
Let's do it. I'm so down.
Yeah, you're going to Blazers Warriors game 3, yeah?
Yep, that's right.
Where are you going to be? Visiting locker room, home locker room? Where are you going to be?
Probably home locker room.
Okay. Hopefully it'll be a happy locker room. She said free for all Friday. Write that down, somebody.
Yeah.
All right. Free for all Friday. I like that.
I do too. I think that's great.
And then do you think as the listeners come on, I give them either the studio audience booing them or cheering them based on their, is that too much or no?
Well,
let's try it here.
We've been doing that, those sound effects forever.
Well, just because you're tired of them doesn't mean the listeners, it could be somebody's first day. They always tell us in radio, hey, it's great that these people are back, but also keep in mind, this could be somebody's first time ever listening to the show today.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. But we could be, I think she came up with the Free for All Friday. I bet you she can come up with a couple of good sound effects.
Maybe I should just make things up as we go, depending on how good the call is. Let's start with this guy. This guy's coming from California. Rubio's in Santa Clara. Rubio, what's on your mind?
Oh, I don't know, man. I was just curious. Was there anything good on last night? I didn't get a chance to watch TV.
Yeah.
Did I owe you a phone call?
Get it all out. You had to be scared out of your mind at the end of the first half, down 15.
Nope, I wasn't. Actually, I was scared out of my mind in the last 20 seconds. I said, if we don't make it happen now, this is where they get a safety pass, and that bothered me a bunch. And I was really impressed by Seth. I think he stuck it to his brother, and he got a couple of those pick out of his pockets, and that was commendable. It's like, okay, little boy, come get yours. That's awesome. I think you guys played an exceptional battle plan in the first three quarters of the game, but there's just this whole other level that the Warriors go to in the fourth quarter, man.
You guys thing and the we thing? And
look, if you know your history, you know that we believe, and that's 2009. That's our mantra. And you also know that our current is strength in numbers. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And in this case,
that's not at all what it's about for the Warriors. It's about we got Steph Curry, we got Kevin Durant, we got Draymond Green. This is not like man of the people. These are a bunch of snotty all-stars who have combined themselves in one place. It's like the bullies on the playground.
We got Jordan Bell. We got Sean Livingston, who was broken. We picked up Jarebko. Come on, man. We're not just the Hampton Five. Steph came onto this squad when we sucked, and we did suck. We didn't stay Golden State Warriors. GSW was not Golden State Warriors. It stood for gunshot wound, in as much as the Trailblazers were the Jailblazers. So do not forget that we were a horrible team, but we had a great front office who believed and made the right moves. We were lucky to get Mark Jackson, and he brought us to the level where a player coach like Steve Kerr could come in and say, here you go, boys, run. And they do it, and they do it, and they do it well.
Well, you were nervous, and that's what counts.
A little bit.
All right.
But I won't be there. I'm nervous for Saturday. I'll give you Saturday. You will not win on Monday. This thing's over in 5.
So he says, there's Rubio calling in. Dave, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the whole we thing, you know. Yeah. It's a we. You want to get behind the curtain. You don't say we. It's not we. There's the team and then there's the fan. Okay?
My team.
That's right.
It's not we. You and the mouse that's in your pocket.
But he's a huge fan. He's never getting into radio. He's never getting into any of this because he could never say that.
He is passionate.
That's great.
I hear from Blazer fans who are just the same.
Yep.
But Blazer fans hate him right now.
Well, they hate him because he's rubbing it in. I mean, he's rubbing it in, and I don't like the we thing, but the rubbing it in part, I get it.
503-417-7575. Dave's in Longview, wants to talk about Michael Avenatti. Dave, what do you think about this?
Hey, John. I moved up here a couple of years ago, and one of the local radio stations broadcasts the Fox Sports guys, and Clay Travis has had Avenatti on his station or interviewed him. And you might want to go on Twitter and get a hold of him, and it'd be a good interview for both of you.
Yeah, might be good for him. I mean, it'd be good for him to get an audience. I mean, that's the thing. That's the position I'm always in with this show. I remember once upon a time I had the guy who was O.J. Simpson's attorney on this show. Okay? O.J. Simpson.
Which one?
It was the guy...
Cochran?
No. This is a different attorney. This was like his personal...
Oh, okay.
He wasn't part of the Dream Team.
Gotcha.
But this guy went out after the double homicide and wrote a book about it, and then he wanted to come on the show. And I was really kind of like, should I bring him on? Should I not bring him on? I ultimately left it up to the listeners, and I said, all right, listeners, you tell me, do I bring this guy on or not? And the listeners were divided. We finally brought him on, but by the end of the interview, I was so repulsed that I ended up hanging up on the guy and telling him what a scumbag he was. It's a good interview. I could replay parts of it.
You could end up doing the exact same thing, but it's good radio.
But Avenatti, could go that way with him.
It could.
You think I should invite him on?
I think it'd be great.
All right. Maybe I'll do that. We'll see. Maybe I'll leave it to listeners. Do you want to hear from Michael Avenatti, or do we justify his existence by bringing him on the show and giving him the platform?
The reason I want to hear it is because you're going to give him tough questions. That's what I want to see. He gets a lot of lobs sometimes wherever you see him at. He doesn't go on to some of these things, certain areas, because people don't, you know, because he doesn't want the tough questions. He's going to get tough questions.
The thing about him is, like, with Jose Canseco, there's a celebrity part to him that, like, I'm interested in, even though he had no credibility. He was telling the truth about the PEDs. Nobody believed him. With Avenatti, there's no celebrity element other than he represented Stormy Daniels. He's been indicted on extortion. He's made himself, he is notorious. He's not famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just wonder, like, beyond, like, when I bring him on, it's going to be at arm's length, and he's going to get hard questions. And if he bucks at it, then the interview goes totally sideways. 503-417-7575. Should we bring him on or no? Avenatti on the show or no? I appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of their day. It's not an airline. I'm not going to be like, I know you have choices. Thank you for flying with us today. I feel like the difference between this show and shows, maybe other shows that are local shows that I have listened to over the years, is I feel like you're in the room with us. I'm asking you for your input, your feedback. We're always interested in what you have to say. If you're listening on a podcast, give us a rating. You can give us 5 stars or you can give us 4 stars. It's up to you. Adriana loves it when you give a rating. When we get new subscribers, she's so... If you want to make Adriana smile through the weekend, if you're listening on a podcast or not even, just get your iPhone out and subscribe to the podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Bald Face Truth Radio Show. And it'll make her day. You've seen those numbers. They just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody about the numbers this week. They've been really high.
Sky high. It's not all Blazer related either. A lot of it sometimes is just, people just like to consume the show, and I like that. All right, people want to weigh in on what we were calling, what was it called? Freaky Friday?
Free for all Friday.
You already forgot. No wonder you wanted somebody to write it down.
I'm getting old. No, you know what happens is I have too many ideas in my head.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Way too many
ideas. That's a way to respond. I like that response. I'm going to remember that.
I have too much going on.
I didn't forget. I got too many ideas in my head.
Too many ideas. They just get spaced out. There's limited. We don't have a Costco-sized warehouse up here. It's more of a mini-mart. Okay. Eric is in Eugene. Eric, you want to talk about Jonathan Smith and his recruiting. Is it a mistake for him not to be more active on social media?
Well, I think that's maybe a great way to think of it for the fans, which is why he's doing a newspaper article. But
also, don't you think that is what the assistant coaches are going to do? I mean, he's a head coach. He's running the entire program. Maybe there's a select individuals, but when it's necessary, remember he was a quarterback. I mean, he knows how to navigate through these scenarios. He was at a big school with Peterson. And so I think when it's necessary, he'll do that. But I think the newspaper article plays well for the press and the fans. Nobody brings it up when Cristobal would say something like that. But also, don't try and be the uncle who's trying to be too cool and, hey, I will Skype you and I will Instagram you. That doesn't work either.
I don't think Skype is that cool. Is Skype that cool, Alabama Adriana?
No, it's all about the FaceTime now.
There you go. See? She's on fire today. There are some days where she's not on fire. But today, she is.
That is so rude.
But I'm just saying, you're kind of like that pitcher that we can't really tell when you're warming up if you're going to have your good stuff. But once you have pitched to a couple batters, we're like, oh, she's got it. She's throwing strikes.
I'll surprise you.
A lot of swings and misses today with Alabama Adriana pitching. Look, here's the thing on social media. I think I agree with people who are saying it raises concerns because I again, on the flip side, if Jonathan Smith is not active on social media, who is he missing out on? Who is he not connecting with? Is he relating to players? Those are bigger questions for me. I'd rather talk to the players and say, is he relatable? Willie Taggart, when he was at Oregon, and I hate that I wasn't ready for this. Willie Taggart, when he was at Oregon, there was a lot of speculation that Willie Taggart was not running his own social media.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
See, I should have had that ready. Alabama Adriana would have had that ready if she was hosting the show. That's how on fire she is today. But if Willie Taggart wasn't running his social media, which the allegation came from numerous coaches in the Pac-12, they're like, that's not even him. He's got somebody else who's doing all that ring, ring, all that stuff. He's just, and a lot of it is scheduled. And if you're not reaching kids where they are, I am wondering, like, where are you? Are you reaching kids at all? So if I'm Jonathan Smith, I would have been reluctant to do that interview in which I would admit that social media is not for me. Because I don't know if that's going to cost him a kid. Because if you're winning, like, is Nick Saban all over Twitter? I don't know. I don't follow Nick Saban. Is he have a Twitter account?
My first reaction would say he probably does, but I don't know if he runs it himself.
Yeah, I don't think he runs it, but I think the key to this is that you have a coach like Coach Feld with the Ducks who is super vocal on Twitter and Instagram, and he can relate to those young kids better than maybe the head coach can. So I think you get somebody on your team like that who's really lively and has a lot of energy and can relate to those kids in a way that maybe you can't.
You're kind of our person like that.
Exactly. Yeah,
definitely.
What is it called? Fill the sleeves? She's always yelling that.
Fill the sleeves! And then when you need to have a conversation, you put the coach on, right? Is that what you're saying? Something like
that?
Yeah,
like when it gets down to the business part, you talk to the head coach, but to reel them in, you use that flashiness.
Okay, I get that. You got to have versatility. You have to have range on your staff.
She reels everybody in, you keep them.
That's the point. I notice a lot of people, like if you, I think if you Google Alabama Adriana, tell me if I'm wrong, Google it. Tell me what pops up. What are the most popular searches? I think it's like picture of Alabama Adriana. What's Alabama Adriana? What is it? Is it something bad? What is it?
I'm going to let you know.
No, it's just my Twitter.
Oh, yeah, there you are. Yeah,
is that what pops up?
Yeah, it's her Twitter. Yeah, there
if
you go.
If you Google Alabama Adriana, that's what pops up.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Does anything bad pop up? She's acting like something bad's going to pop
no,
up.
I'm looking. I don't see anything bad. Oh, look at that. Bald-faced truth comes up pretty on the first page.
There you go.
Yeah, I think the foundation might pop up too.
All right. That's not a bad thing.
No.
You get a charity for kids. By the way, for people who are looking for a summer camp for your kids, Camp Exceptional is the summer camp of the Bald-faced Truth Foundation. It's a summer camp for kids who are typical. And it's a summer camp for kids who have special needs. So kids who are non-special needs and have special needs meet together in the summer camp. This year, it's July 15th through the 19th. It'll be at LaSalle High School in Milwaukee. It is a 9 a.m. to noon day. It's a short day. It's a sports camp. Typically, the Thorns, the Timbers, the Hops, the Winterhawks, everybody gets involved. If your kid would like to attend the camp, go to campexceptional.com or go to baldfacetruth.org and click on the Camp Exceptional link. The tuition, which is offset by a lot of generous donors and subsidized, is only $129 for the week. It is very affordable, and it is a relationship camp. I think it's, you know, I think sometimes, I know my 16-year-old, she went for 6 years, and she is now going to be a counselor at the camp because at age 15, so it's 5 to 15 is the age range. At age 15, you get phased out. She's very excited now to be a counselor at the camp, but if you have a kid who's looking for something fun to do in the summer, don't leave your kids home playing video games. Get them outside. That's what I'm saying. David's in Astoria. David, what's up?
Avenatti, no. I tell you why. I try and be an informed, involved citizen, and one of the big challenges in doing that is weeding out the fluff. There's so much misinformation, disinformation, outright lies, and frivolous BS out there that I don't need more.
No more.
Yeah.
All right. So he says no on Avenatti. I don't know. I think sometimes bringing those guys on and kind of punching holes in their theories is good. It's also potentially really entertaining for you guys. I always feel exhausted at the end. Sam Adams, Chip Kelly, OJ's lawyer.
Commissioner Scott.
Commissioner Larry Scott. At the end of it, I always feel a little like I've been in the arena. And I'm never sure that I've won or lost, but sometimes it's good theater. All right. Our 2 o'clock hour is ahead. You got the bald-faced truth. You're listening statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
John Canzano, raw, sourced, fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the bald-faced truth.
Cruising right along. We are in the 2 o'clock hour. Hasn't seemed like that long. And by the way, I flew this morning from Oakland to Portland this morning pretty early. And then I came right downtown to the PacWest Center. They have a gym down here now.
Was it pretty? What's pretty early?
I went to bed probably, must have been after 1 a.m.
And what time was your flight?
It was a, I was up at 5.
Nice.
Is that Bobby Bean time?
Oh, I've already been to the gym, had breakfast, came back at 5 o'clock.
Just showing off. What time do you go to bed, though?
I go to bed pretty early. I go to bed. I'm in bed by 9 o'clock.
So the Blazer game had just ended last night?
And yeah, went to bed.
Yeah, I was surprised because the game, now they're tipping off at 6 o'clock. I have no sense of what time it is after the game. And you're leaving that arena pretty late, but it was kind of a flat night for Blazer fans. I know that. And CJ McCollum seemed very disappointed in the post game, and the Blazers were upset. Coming up, we're going to talk to Nick Krupke of Fox 12. He is coming back from Oakland himself. He'll be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. But I also want to talk. I have a few things that are on my mind here. I want to get a few things off my chest when it comes to this radio show. But first, I've got to do the 2 at 2. We do it every day, right at 2 o'clock. It's clockwork.
The 2 at 2.
All right, if you're a Blazer fan, you may be traumatized by the past, the history of the Blazers. Last night was a new chapter. Blazers looked good, didn't they, for a long time?
Curry's body, which gave him space.
Lillard and Leonard play catch. Lillard splits the defense, gets in the paint, layup. Bang shot is good, and the foul.
Blazers look great right up until the end. Damian Lillard tried to get a shot off. Andre Iguodala said no. I didn't love that the Blazers, by the way, the box score says it's a shot. They called it a 29-foot jump shot by Damian Lillard. That was not a shot. When you get stripped of the ball and then you jump in the air and the ball gets stripped again, that's just a strip. Andre Iguodala has got great hands. After the game, it was all the talk. What, he's got great hands. He's such a good defender. And I kept thinking to myself, why didn't somebody give Damian Lillard a screen? Try to get Andre Iguodala off the ball. There was time, certainly, but not a timeout. The question now, did Golden State steal the game? Terry Stotts.
I don't know if they stole it. I thought they played like a championship team would. And I think we had 2 or 3 points in the last 3.5 minutes, and we got to be able to score in those situations.
C.J. McCollum missed 6 straight shots to finish the game.
I think it's just a make or miss league. We had some good looks. I personally had some good looks. I had an open three I missed. I had a floater I missed late. I had a switch with Draymond. I missed a three-pointer. So I think it's just a make-or-miss league. They played good defense, but I can live with the shots I miss every day of the week. And I think, you know, offensively, we had some pretty good possessions. We just didn't finish them.
Yeah, they're going to have to live with it. They come back to Portland trailing 2-0. Game 3 on Saturday, Moda Center. Hey, Blazer fans, this is the biggest advantage that you've got in this series. I said it, I wrote it, I tweeted it. Oracle Arena is like a corporate event. They have priced out the rank-and-file diehard Warrior fan who went to games over the years. I looked around. I saw a very corporate, white-collar crowd in Oakland. And it's no wonder they're moving to San Francisco. It makes sense. They're moving to their fan base, which is corporate America. Moda Center, you're not priced out. Or maybe you are, but the fans who are diehard fans at Moda Center, 100 level, 200 level, 300 level, are going to be far louder, far more involved, far more passionate than the Warrior fans were. It's a huge advantage in this series. Do not discount it. By the way, Damian Lillard, was he fouled on that last play?
So I was just trying to get space to get a three up. I know it's a tough position for the referees to be in to make a call at that point in the game. But, you know, I tried to get a little bit of space the first time. He grabbed my arm, and, you know, I lost the ball a little bit. I regained it, and I was going to shoot it again. And he got his hand on the ball. For me, as the offensive player, I felt like it was contact. There's a lot of contact, but obviously the ref is not going to decide the game or jump in at that point. You know, so they good defensive play.
Good defensive play. I thought it was good officiating, too. I think you let him play in that situation. Blazers didn't lose that game on that last shot either. They lost that game in the final 4 minutes when they blew an 8-point lead. Again, game 3 is huge. Michael Avenatti in the news. When is this guy not in the news lately? Former attorney for Stormy Daniels. Accused. Extortionist. I was going to say contortionist. He's an accused extortionist. That's what Avenatti is. He's also in the news claiming that the University of Oregon is investigating allegations that Nike arranged for payments to Bol Bol, who's now on his way to the NBA. University of Oregon says no. Not true. Not enough there for... There's nothing for us to investigate. Avenatti says, here's some screenshots. I think it's a really interesting dilemma when you've got a guy who has limited credibility, who is out front trying to say, I know something that you all should know about. And in the end, it's Jose Canseco claiming everybody's doing PEDs. My big takeaway from college basketball is this. It's very likely that some players are getting paid. Anybody surprised by that? Raise your hand if you're surprised by it. Nobody's surprised by it. So if you're the NCAA, founded in 1933, operating with the same bylaws that came along in 1933, maybe it's time to look at your antiquated system and ask yourself, how do we weed out sneaker money? How do we weed out the handlers? How do we make this process a purer, cleaner process instead of looking to the NBA to solve it? Because right now I feel like college basketball is looking at the NBA going, help us out by waiving this age restriction so that the guys who are interested and have their hands out, want to get paid, can just go get paid and go to the NBA. But see, that's a cop-out. That's passing the buck. That's the NCAA basically saying, hey, we don't want to solve this problem. I don't know if we can solve this problem. Let's let the NBA solve it. That's my 2 at 2. Avenatti and the Ducks. I also asked Austin Meek earlier in the show about George Horton, the baseball coach at Oregon. I thought he was more eloquent than I in sort of dancing around the idea that the reason why Horton still has a job is not because Oregon is okay with a guy finishing 7th or 8th or 8th or 8th or 8th. You look at his finishes in the last few years in the Pac-12 conference in baseball. The reason why George Horton continues to be employed is because the boosters who hired him are very influential at Oregon. And Meek said it in a more concise manner than me, but I'm just going to tell you this. Baseball and softball don't matter as much to the administrators and the bottom line at Oregon as football and basketball do, and men's basketball particularly. I think Kelly Graves, the women's basketball coach, is doing a hell of a job. There might not be a coach on that campus that has done a better job in the last 5 years than Kelly Graves. And I was really pleased to see Oregon reward him with a contract that will keep him there. Because I had reasonable doubt. I was kind of looking at how they handled Mike White, the softball coach at Oregon, and I kind of thought, well, are they going to just go, hey, you know, this sport, this women's basketball thing is nice, but it's not paying the bills. Are they going to do that at Oregon? And instead, Rob Mullins, Oregon, the boosters, whoever it is who's writing the checks, ultimately stepped up and said, all right, we're going to do what's necessary to keep Kelly Graves at Oregon. Because, you know, damn well, some other Pac-12 school is going to want to hire Kelly Graves, you know, the quickest they can get him in. I mean, he's a winner. Same goes for Oregon State and Scott Ruick. He's a winner. That's, you know, it's smart for Oregon State to give multi-year deals and lock these guys down, and they do what they have to do. And Mario Cristobal, when Miami came knocking last summer or whatever it was, into the last football season, they didn't even have to officially make an offer. Oregon just kind of went and said, all right, how do we ensure that we don't get Willie Taggarted here? Is that a thing? Can I use that as a verb? You get taggart? And by the way, Rob Mullins coming up as a potential candidate at Texas A&M. I got a theory on that too. The athletic director at Oregon suddenly, what was it, a month ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, is rumored to be a candidate at Texas A&M. I don't think for a second Rob Mullins wanted to go to Texas A&M. I do think that Rob Mullins was on a little bit soft footing at Oregon based on the handling of Mark Helfrich's contract. Like, they gave an extension and then they had to fire Helfrich. That cost them money. And then Willie Taggart came in, and everybody was like, oh, Taggart's going to be the solution. So he hired Taggart.
Make no excuses. Blame no one. And do something. We will continue to live by those beliefs as we return this football program to the lawful status that it deserves.
And 7 months later, he left. So I think Mullins was in a little bit of trouble. By the way, he left, and he also used university chartered aircraft and university funds to go be interviewed by Florida State. Did it chap you that Willie used university recruiting trip to audition, or is that just business?
I don't know. You know, I'm...
That's a yes. You know, that's a yes.
Obviously, I'm disappointed in a lot of pieces of this, John. I'll leave it at that.
All right, so I think this Texas A&M, here's my theory on Rob Mullins' name coming up in the A&M search. I think Rob Mullins, as the chair of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, got a lot of visibility, networked, and rightfully so. He should be a candidate for a job like that. I also don't think he was interested in leaving ever, but I think it's good to be wanted. And I think Mullins, who's coming off of the hire of Taggart that didn't go so well, the extension for Helfrich that didn't go so well, he hires Cristobal, and that's, you know, kind of like a question. That's a solid question mark, right? Like, if he has a less than favorable outcome with Mario Cristobal, I would think that Rob Mullins is in a little trouble. He had the Mike White thing in softball. That didn't go very well. I think if you're Rob Mullins, getting your name out there for an A&M job, just letting people, like your boosters, know, hey, good to be wanted. Somebody else wanted me. I think that's really smart of Mullins, and I think it's strategic. And I think that's, you know, and essentially, he's an accountant who's an AD. There's two different kinds of ADs. There's the AD that is the schmoozer guy who will wine and dine the boosters and slap backs. He's got a big personality. He'll stand at the front of the room and, you know. And then there's the AD that is the really solid negotiator of contracts and bean counter. And Mullins is the second of those two. And if you're going to be the AD at Texas A&M, you got to be all hat and all cattle. And I kept thinking about Rob Mullins, thinking he's got one of those. He might be all hat and no cattle, or no hat and all cattle, but he doesn't have them both. So I just think having his name out there was a win for him. And people at Oregon going, oh no, I hope he doesn't leave. Okay, Rob's coming back. That helps Rob. His footing is just a little solid, more solid after that. All right, Nick Krupke will be joining us next. He's been with the Blazers on this magical run. I wanted to bring him on. I think he's got a real good sense of what's going on with the team, the mindset. He is back from his exclusive tour of Oakland, and we will talk to him from KPTV in Portland. You see him on in Portland television. Nick Krupke will be with us, sports anchor with KPTV next. All right, last night, Blazers, great first half. I thought the Warriors fans inside Oracle were a little nervous. There were a couple of Yahoos that were right in front of me. They were kind of looking back. The fans got a little quiet inside that arena because it wasn't going how they scripted it. I don't know what they're paying for those tickets, but it's not cheap. I can tell from the crowd. They have priced out the rank-and-file fan. Very corporate, Super Bowl-like crowd. Nick Krupke is our guest. I think this guy does a good job. I think he's underrated. You talk about overrated or underrated? Nick Krupke is underrated. You should check him out on Fox 12 KPTV, and he joins us now. You're underrated.
I'm like, the Nate McMillan of local sports reporters?
I like it. I was eavesdropping.
Lead in with the Van Halen, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we try to find something that suits you.
I just, when I hear Van Halen, I picture it as my uncle driving a Trans Am, T-tops, with a Bud Light in his hand.
I like it. Mario Cristobal has requested Guns N' Roses every time he comes on.
You know, him and Merritt Paulson should get a room and hang out together.
And Jonathan Smith wants no music. He says he's not. He'd rather do a phone call. Krupke, tell me, what'd you think last night? Take us through it emotionally.
You know, I really thought last night they were going to get it before they stepped on the floor. And then that first half they have, you know, Kevin, my photographer, sitting back there kind of editing at halftime. We're like, geez, they're going to win, man, big time. And then we say, yeah, but it's the Warriors. And then another 39-point quarter. I mean, how crazy is that? They pulled down 39 in the fourth in game one to pull that one out. I mean, they're champions, you know. They've been here, obviously, so many times before. They know how to do it, man. And, you know, the Blazers still, unfortunately, learning along the way. But even that last, four and a half, they had two field goals. They had the Myers three. He had the Seth three in the last minute. And that was it. I mean, and this easy stuff. That last minute, those last two Warrior buckets, just that's what they do. Get it moving down the floor in transition and not a defender down low. It's wild stuff. But that certainly felt like more than one loss for one game, didn't it?
Yeah, I felt like it was such a big swing because that 1-1 coming back home, I'm looking at a 6 or 7 game series. Now,
totally.
2-0, I mean, we could have a sweep here, you know, if Portland doesn't answer the bell in game three.
Look, if they can't get one with Kevin Durant out, I know he's going to be gone this weekend too. You still got to win 4 out of 5 from those guys. You see what they're capable of. I mean, on a night where the Blazers double up for threes, 18-9, and you still lose. I don't know what else. I don't know what else you can do. You know, can Nurk get healthy? No. You know, can you bring back Terry Porter? No. Yeah, I don't know what they're at, man. I certainly hope that they can at least get a win at one to force a game five back down there, but it's hard to see this thing going six.
Nick Krupke with us, Fox 12 Sports. You can catch him on KPTV. You have been around this team as they have gone in the series against Oklahoma City, then to Denver, now Golden State. What is the narrative of this season going to be if it ends here in the Western Conference Finals?
Well, it's definitely an achievement, right? I mean, nobody had it with Paul going down. Obviously, with Nurk, we all wrote him off at that point in time, and it was a nice first-round win over Oklahoma City to have the iconic finish to that one. And I don't think a lot of people even had him going to Denver. Denver had such a great home record this season, too, and to take two out of there with backs against the wall, win those last two. That's a great stepping stone for the team, the franchise, if ever, you know, it's like a whole lot of moves this team could really make with all the cap situation for next year. It's been a success, but it's a disappointment to get back to this level and just not be able to seize the opportunity, man, because you've worked so many years to get to this spot. And to watch really both of those games, certainly were winnable, you know, being down, what was it, six going to the fourth quarter in game one as well. But that's just, you get so close to these guys and just haven't been able to crack the code, not like anybody in the league has. But you get an opportunity for that, you really got to step on it, man. They just couldn't do it.
Who's the most enjoyable interview that you do? And I'm not talking about star power, because I think you naturally go to Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum. But if Nick Krupke's having a cup of coffee, this is not going to be aired. You're just going to talk to a guy. Who are you sitting down with on this Blazers roster?
You know who was good yet again last night? Because he played? Myers. Maybe we'd have the Coors Light together. I think Myers is a fun guy, man. He's just a lover of life, and he's thoughtful in his remarks. And he never, you know, some guys like, nah, I don't have time for you. He's always got time for you, and I enjoy Myers. Give me a cup of coffee with Myers.
In the pregame, when they warm up, sometimes he'll come over and he'll just sit down, and he'll start talking, and it's interesting to me to see him that way. And then last night, I thought the fan base was kind to him on social media. I think they liked the minutes that he played down the stretch.
Hey, man, he throws some bodies down there, you know, and he sees his personal opportunity. Of course, there's some plays down the stretch they'd like to get back, but I've always been a fan of Myers. I know not everybody is. This guy's got a heart.
When did they lose the game last night?
When CJ dropped his last six shots. You know, maybe if any of those shots go, they're all pretty decent looks, then I think it's a different situation. Obviously, the three-point play, you know, Steph kind of, Steph kicking his leg out on Dame, that's going to get called, of course, every time. And then what do you think, too? You know, we're so far away from the play last night when Dame gets, they say it's a block, but it was a steal. Is that get called a foul earlier in the game?
Maybe, but I think if Damian is on the defensive side, he wouldn't have wanted the call. You know, I always ask myself, if you flip the two guys around, is the guy still bitching about it? I didn't think that play, because it was such a desperation thing. If he hits the three there, I have very limited confidence they can win in overtime anyway. And I start looking further back, and I go, okay, where was the real breakdown? And I agree with you. If CJ McCollum just makes a shot or two that he normally makes, they're right there.
No doubt. I mean, I think these guys are just, they're so worn out, they're so tired, man. I mean, to go from Denver, and, you know, they didn't have even a shoot-around before game one. Looked better. I mean, they had a little more defensive spacing to get to work the switches to get out on the ring, but they're just outmatched, man. It's the Warriors. You can't be totally upset about it, because the Warriors are the Warriors for what they are. But gosh, it'd be nice to see them even this thing up in the next two nights and go 2-2.
Kevin Durant celebrating with Draymond. He makes the comment, they don't want to go to the finals. They're not going to the finals, whatever he said. Is that just a guy celebrating with his teammate, or is that a guy twisting the knife a little bit?
He's a knife twister. You know, come on. How many burner accounts does he have? You know, that's Kevin. You know, and he's going to leave and go do something on his own, you know. He's the favorite Sonic that never was. But that's what they do. I don't take any harm in that. I mean, whatever. Smack talk. That's what makes the NBA good.
Do you think that motivates this Blazers team?
I hope it does. I mean, when you look back at that Oklahoma series, so many guys were cranked up because of all the John and all the disrespect that OKC was showing. And even early in that Denver series, it was a lot of platitudes. And, oh, they're really good. We like them. You know, and that changed as well in those last spot, game 5, 6, and 7. So I think that if there could be some hatred on either side, I think that certainly Dame and those guys, they play up to that when they got that chip on their shoulder. and they're called out and they're called down, called in the carpet. They answered the bell. So if that's what it's going to take, then let's have a good time on Saturday night.
I got a theory about this Blazers team, and let me test it on you because you've been around them. You know these guys. I feel like they're kind of these outcasts and misfits. You know, Dame and CJ both didn't go to like blue blood colleges. Came from off the radar. They fight for everything they have to get. And I look around, Evan Turner, who wanted him except the Blazers? Ennis Kanter, you know, he's not anybody's first choice at center. And you got a bunch of guys like that. Rodney Hood, even, who was left rotting on the bench in Cleveland. And Seth Curry, who's the other Curry. I feel like they're more resilient because by nature, these are guys who have all had to fight and come back from failure. And I think that's why they're better with their backs against the wall.
That's a great idea. I think you're spot on that. That's why you're John Canzano. That's why you write the articles. That's why you make the blogs. I think you're right, man. I mean, for these guys, they're just such a tight unit. You know how unified they are, and they all really, true, are linked together as a one whole unit. You've been in locker rooms before where there's guys in the corner and guys that obviously don't get along or obviously kind of the way they speak about each other. This is legitimate friendship. Legitimate teammates, I think, for years to come, these guys are done playing basketball. But they need a whole lot of scrappiness to get together to get at least one of these wins here to keep the season alive.
Nick Krupke, KPTV, Fox 12 Sports anchor, is with us. Nick, give us, what do you think is going to happen Saturday night? Let's focus there. From atmosphere in the building to result in the game, what do you see?
I want to see the Blazers get out there and have another hot start because, you know, that crowd can start getting the defeatist attitude, man. It's going to be fired up and jacked up. But if they can keep it rolling there and keep it a tight game into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, I think they got it. But maybe they just blitz them again. You know, if they can come out, I'm not saying they're going to have a 65-point half yet again. But when the Blazers play that ball and when they can get the movement and the extra pass and Dame can be on it, CJ can be on it, you get some – the big one, if you get Mo and Keith or you get Seth, that extra guy, Rodney, somebody else that can really contribute and kind of pull the defense away when they're trying to double CJ or Dame – that's really the key for me. And so keep the crowd in it because you know they're going to be ready to go 19 years in the making. So save your voice boxes tonight and let it all rip tomorrow.
I love how fun it's been. You've been at the center of it. What do you have coming up that our listeners can watch on Fox 12?
Well, we're just riding home from PDX right now, sitting in traffic, so it's good to be home with that. We'll be back at the stadium tomorrow, back at the arena, back at MOTA. I still want to call it Rose Garden. We can do that, I think.
Don't you guys have a are you riding in a news truck?
We're riding in a white fleet vehicle.
But does it have like Fox 12 on the side of it?
No, it's unmarked. Don't tell anybody that. You wouldn't even know it's us.
You know what you should do is if you had the Fox 12 one, you could get like on the shoulder of the road and just go by all the traffic. Everybody would be like, "Oh, that's a news crew going somewhere important."
I don't think that's how it works. I don't know. I'm never in those kind of vehicles, but maybe I should be if that is how it works.
You just make a siren sound as you hang out the window, and your driver goes down the shoulder.
Look, there's an app for that. I can do that just hanging out the window. I'll do it.
All right, Krupke, I will see you courtside on Saturday for Game 3. You're guaranteeing a Blazers victory. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, but I guaranteed one yesterday, so don't count on me. But that's what I feel. It's great to share courtside with you. We don't everybody know when you're making that TV magic. By the way, you wear minimal makeup. I appreciate that about you.
Thank you.
I didn't wear any this weekend. We're shoulder to shoulder down there.
I know.
And we're all talking loud, being energetic, and trying to jazz it up. That's how the magic's happening.
I love it. All right. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for making time. There he is.
Fox 12 sports anchor Nick Krupke. He does a really good job. Check him out on KPTV. And I don't view people say, "Oh, that's a competitor. You're bringing a competitor on." That's not true. I like Joe Becker last night. On press row or on the baseline prior to the game, you got Joe Becker of K2, who's going live next to me. You got me and Orlando Sanchez for KGW. You got Krupke for KPTV. And then you got Coyne, of course, with AJ going live. So all the Portland TV stations are all over this thing. And he's right. We're like almost shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder. And literally the cameramen are talking to each other going, "What time are you live? 5:04? Okay. We're at 5:06. So you go ahead." So we kind of all just kind of shift a little bit. And then when you see it on TV, you see like this clean shot.
Like, Krepke's like 6 inches away from me over on this side. Joe Becker's over here. And then there's like the NBA China crowd. ESPN China has like a billion, you know, people watching it. They have a person who's interviewing like reporters from America in English and then translating it back to their audience. It is a phenomenal experience watching this all happen at the same time and trying to look natural. I think a cooler thing I told the cameraman is take a picture of all the people who are on this row. Like, I think the viewer seeing that scene would be so much more interesting than just seeing, you know, Orlando and I talk about the game. All right, you got the bald-faced truth coming up. I'm going to make you laugh. I might make you cry. I will certainly make you think. I was on the plane this morning riding next to a guy who was talking to me about college. His kids are in college. He did a really smart thing with his home loan because he had young kids. And I just want to pass this along, like public service from me to you. He lined up his mortgage payment on a rental house that he had and his own home loan with his kids' high school graduation dates. When they were very young, with the thinking that real estate would appreciate and he would be gaining equity in his house as the house appreciated. And then when his kids went to college, if he was in a pinch, you know, because I don't know nowadays if you can contribute enough to your kids' college funds, but he just thought, if I'm in a pinch, I can always sell a rental house or I can rent out the house and use the proceeds to pay for my kids' college. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. I don't know if you are tuned in with your mortgage rate. I know a lot of people, I ask people, like, what's your rate? Because I grew up in a household that is a mortgage household. And I was well aware of interest rates at like age 12, 13, 14, 15, like oddly aware. Because our livelihood, our home relied upon that stuff. But a lot of homeowners don't have any idea about interest rates. But if you are interested in doing something like the guy on the plane did, American Financing can help you. I'm going to give their phone number because that's the company that I trust. American Financing. If you've been thinking about refinancing or if you are interested in refinancing, take advantage of these rates. Use some strategy to try to line up your rates with some kind of event in your household. Like the guy I was on the plane with, he paid his house off while his kids were going to school. It was awesome. You can choose your refi benefits and how long you want the term to be with American Financing. So just, you know, you can do whatever you want with the extra money. But here's the bottom line. You can reach American Financing at 503-452-4444. 503-452-4444. Or just look up American Financing online. Tell them I sent you. They're good people. They'll take care of you. They take care of us. They've taken care of my family and my friends. So American Financing is the right way to do it. And they will help you get that strategy. And I always say that this show is about more than sports or opinions or me riffing. And I will often say that it's about life. And these are one of these occasions in which I think it's really interesting. Use American Financing. Again, let me get the phone number up again. It's 503-452-4444. American Financing. Okay, we've had a special guest in studio with us this whole show. Matt Bagley is with us. He's from a sister station down in Medford. And we're all in the same business. Bagley, how are you?
I'm doing great, John.
Can we punch him up? All right.
I got to press a button.
Yeah,
there.
You're good.
That's my bad.
No, he was supposed to get you. I didn't tell him that you were coming on. What is your takeaway? You've been observing the whole show.
I'm amazed that the best radio show in Portland can be run with three people. I'm amazed also, by the way, that Alabama Adriana, you got to pay her John Canzano money.
You spent too much time with her down there.
She's amazing.
Yeah. We just come in and we try to do a show that we'd like to listen to.
Right.
There's a lot more people working on it. They're not here, but you see the three people that are here. There's the coal mines are on the next floor. That's where the research team is and the producers and all the people that we have running around here. But I appreciate you being here.
Yeah.
And you're from Medford?
From Medford. Grew up in Southern Oregon. Love being there and travel all up and down across the state for play-by-play. Love being in Portland.
All right. So for people who are never going to get a chance to come and observe the show, give them, like, you know, in 30 seconds, what you saw.
I saw madness. I saw diehard fans that you didn't even throw out a phone number in the first segment. They were going crazy on the phone lines. And I saw people that, A, were depressed after game two. I saw people that were picking on Portland fan. I saw people that were picking on Warrior fan, new money. I loved it. It was awesome.
You had a good time.
Yeah.
All right. You're welcome back anytime you want. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about you as a fan. Your passion and your emotion. I told you I would make you laugh. I'll make you cry. I'll make you think. One of those things will happen in the next segment of radio. I guarantee you that. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. Blazers, Warriors. Game three. Man, some basketball games just stick with you, don't they? Game two for the Blazers-Warriors will stick with me, and it won't be because the Warriors came back and the Warriors played well. I end up thinking about you. I think about you, the fan. I think about your experience when you're listening or watching a game, and I think about what it means to you. And I've got to tell you, it wasn't the Steph Curry makes. It wasn't Draymond Green, who was absolutely phenomenal in like the sequence of three or four possessions down the stretch. I look back at the Blazers' mistakes. I look at C.J. McCollum, who missed and missed and missed and missed and missed and missed. I look at Seth Curry, who had an open three that he looked like he was going to shoot in the last couple minutes, and then he pulled back and passed the ball, and ultimately the Blazers got nothing out of the possession. I look at Terry Stotts, and I wonder, did he make mistakes in his rotation? And I think about you. I think about you, the sports fan, because you know sports fans live and die with it.
It's the World Cup. It's the World Cup, bro. We had a chance. We had a chance. The second year we lost to Ghana. The second year. Why do we always give up the goal in the last minute? If you don't watch soccer, this is what it means to us. This is what it means to us. We should have won this game.
I know what it means to you. Or how about a crazy Alabama fan?
I can't hurt you. You are just, I don't even have a name for you anymore, except Cow Turd. How dare you say that about Alabama? They lose a game. They lose a game, and they lost it to a good team. The team beat Alabama. But how can you say, after the dynasty took all these years, all these decades, one game is going to mean that Saban's dynasty is over? You're out of your freaking mind, Cow Turd. You need to go back to whatever the hell you was doing before you got on the radio. And how dare you call me out? You call me out, you're going to get me back. You hear me, you punk? How dare you? I don't understand the way you act towards... It's Bama. That's what it is. It's Bama. You don't hate any team in this nation except for Bama. And you know why? Because they're better than what you've got. Nick Saban is a better man than you are. You could never coach because you don't have a bit of coaching in your body. You have nothing but to sit there and insult and down and just carry on about everybody that's doing something different than you. You're jealous. That's the bottom line. You're jealous. And Bama's coming back. Bama has not lost. The dynasty is not over. Do you hear me, Captain? Bama's dynasty has just begun. Kiss my butt. Roll Tide.
Or how about a Chelsea fan, angry, posting on Facebook?
Yesterday, Watford ripped us. Watford.
4-1 that do, 4-1. Absolutely rubbish performance. This is to Bakayoko. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. How I wonder how useless and disgraceful you are. Pathetic you are. Wes, off, Benchot. Off. 40 million down the drains, down the garbage. Even my kachira is cleaner than you. Even my kachira. F***ing kachira is cleaner than you. Off.
That's Premier League fandom. And how about it, even in the Pac-12, softy, media fandom. At KJR in Seattle, remember when Oregon beat Washington in overtime? Here's softy.
All right, baby, here we go. Oh, man, what a week, huh? Man, I feel like shit. My head's f***ing killing me, and I don't give a damn. Let's go, Peyton. He's got this. He's going to make this kick. You and I both know he's making this kick. He is going to make this kick. Here we go, baby. Come on, Peyton. Come on, Peyton. Let's go, big boy. You got it. 38 yards. 38 yards. 38 yards.
Come on, Peyton.
Come on, Peyton. You got it, baby.
Come on, buddy.
Let's go, big boy.
Come on.
Let's go, big boy. Mario's getting nervous. Come on, man.
I would have liked to have had a little more. I didn't like running the clock down at the end there. I thought maybe run one more play and try to get to 34, 35 yards, but... Hey, just, all right, it's okay, 38 yards. If I would have told you before the game that we'd have a crack at a game-winning 38-yard field goal, I think you would have taken it. Didn't we ask this question before the Auburn game earlier in the year, but we said 40. Now it's 38 at Oregon, and you're talking about game 7, not game 1. Look at this.
Okay, you have nervous. To stop talking. Stop talking.
Come on, baby.
Come on, baby.
The big ones upstairs, Wilkers, whatever the hell your name is. Everybody asking, why don't you have a bigger TV? The bigger TV's upstairs, okay? My niece lives with us, and that's her room now. That's why the TV's upstairs and why we're down here, for crying out loud. Stop asking me why we have a small TV. We don't. Make it. Here we go, baby. Come on, Peyton. Come on, Peyton. Come on, Peyton. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I hate this guy.
Come on, Mario.
I hate this guy.
Shit. And he made that one just like freaking Matt Bryant missed it against it. I hate that. I hate icing the kicker. I hate the targeting rules in college football, and I hate icing the kicker on both sides. Their side, our side. I don't give a whose side. Anybody's side. Get it out of the game. Get that crap out of the game. It's driving me freaking crazy. The call on Jalen, the call on the other guy for Oregon, Carlsbad, whoever the freaking hell his name. Terrible. Ruining college football. Hate it.
God. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on, Peyton. 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 You got it. Snap, hold, like an opera. Everything's a piece, just fluid motion.
Come on, Peyton.
Come on, Peyton.
Come on, Peyton.
Come on, baby.
Come on, Peyton.
Come on, Peyton. You got it.
You got it, Peyton.
Fuck. Unbelievable.
That might be my favorite of them all. I talked to Softy yesterday. All right, so what I'm getting at is that you are emotionally invested in this. And if you're a Blazer fan and you were melting down in the second half of that Warriors-Blazers game, just hold on to that thought for a second. Because I had it pointed out to me today that the number 15, you know, the Blazers blew a 15-point lead in the 92 finals against the Bulls. They blew a 15-point lead in the Western Conference finals in 2000 against the Lakers. They blew a 15-point lead last night. I think the bigger sin was blowing the 8-point lead, by the way, with 4 minutes to go. But the bottom line is your basketball team is putting you in position to be emotionally invested. This is much different than a year ago in the playoffs where the Pelicans were sweeping the Blazers out of the first round, and the questions were all about Neil Olshey and are they going to make sweeping changes into the off season. The old saying goes, is it better to have loved and lost or never loved at all? It brings to mind this basketball season. And if you're a Ducks fan, how about the women's Final Four where Sabrina Ionescu and the Ducks fell short? But yeah, they took you to a Final Four. And how about the Oregon men who made the NCAA tournament and got to the Sweet 16 and lost to Virginia. Heartbreaking. Except, yeah, they were in the Sweet 16. There's some joy in that. Yes, I know, we're on the same page. I'm being Captain Obvious here. But what I'm saying is, if you are emotionally invested with your team and you are having high highs and low lows, I'm here to tell you that sports is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's delivering. That's what sports is supposed to do for us. It's supposed to be a diversion from the predictable, from the mundane. That's why people don't like the Warriors. That's why people don't like Kevin Durant. And by the way, Kevin Durant taunting last night, I hope the Blazers make him pay for it in Game 3. He won't even be there. But remember this, Durant and CJ McCollum?
I don't know if I was more mad than when you went to go. I think I was more mad.
Why are you mad about this stuff?
Bro, I'm in the league. What do you mean? Why am I mad about this? I mean, I'm in the Western Conference. I got to play you MFers all the time anyway, as it is, over and over again. We done got eliminated by y'all a few times in the first round. So I'm looking at cuz.
I mean, you know you guys aren't going to win a championship.
Bro, we have the team. We have the capabilities. Anything is possible. We can win a championship, bro.
I mean, let's be honest.
Bro, we can't win a championship. Anything is possible.
I just need to look. I need more. I mean, I like y'all. I like the two. I like y'all too. You're hard to stop. But, I mean, come on. You can't be upset about this.
I can be upset because Cuz was a free agent, which means he could have. This is why I was upset. He could have came to Portland. His agent and Nurk have the same agents. So I'm thinking, okay, you ain't gonna come to us, whatever. Why you gotta go there, Cuz? And I text him. I was mad. I got on Twitter.
Yo, get out your face.
And I really text Cuz. I'm like, Cuz, what's up, bro? Like, why? Like, what?
Yo, you're the first person I've seen.
Why did this happen?
Who says them? I was crying on Twitter when you seen that.
No, people thought I was playing. I for real text Cuz.
No, talked. That was funny.
We hashed it out. I needed to know what was going on. I wanted to know why.
You want him to come to Portland?
Bro, I think that anything is possible, bro. I'm just saying, man. You're trying to get me in trouble. I'm happy with Nurk. Nurk's a great big man for us. Nurk's playing well.
I mean, you did just say on the airwaves, I mean, you might cut it out, but that you just said that you want, he should have came to Portland. So you ain't want Nurk?
Of course I want Nurk.
Okay. But you rather
DeMarcus. We could have had both of them.
Y'all not getting both.
Y'all only paid him $5 million. We had 12 to 15 million in cap.
No way it's happening. Y'all ain't going to be no, it's got to have a nice yin and yang, bro. It's going to be too much of one thing. With y'all. So stop that.
So what do you suggest?
I suggest you just keep playing, man, and don't worry about what goes on at the top of things.
We right there at the top of things. We was a third seed last year, bro. We was right there. We was just slightly below 1-2.
But how'd you play?
Some unfortunate situations happened in the first round.
How'd you play?
Some unfortunate circumstances.
Like an 8 seed.
We did not play. You heard Kevin Durant there speaking to CJ McCollum. It's this part of it that gets to me.
So stop that.
So what do you suggest?
I suggest you just keep playing, man, and don't worry about what goes on at the top of things.
What? Don't worry about what goes on at the top of things. Kevin Durant will not be in Portland for games 3 and 4, but the Warriors will. What's going to happen in game 3? You know what's going to happen? You're going to be emotionally invested, and that's sports doing what it should do. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time. Grab a podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a rating. Give us some feedback. Appreciate everybody who makes this radio program part of their day. Leave it right here.